Chris Cleaves' novel Little Bee is both the story of a Nigerian immigrant girl who flees a horrific situation in her homeland for the relative safety of life in England, and a tale of how people from disparate backgrounds can be brought together into a life-altering bond. We'd hoped to invite Mr. Cleaves on the show when the American hardcover edition of his book was published last year, and the reviewer in the Washington Post raved, "Little Bee will blow you away." But that didn't work out, so I'm very pleased that we've been able to bring Chris Cleaves to our studios to talk about the paperback edition, which is just out from Simon & Schuster. Welcome to our show. Hello. At last.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Now, it was released in England in 2008 under the title The Other Hand. Why was the name changed to Little Bee in the United States?
Sure. In fact, the truth is I didn't choose either of the titles.
Do you prefer one?
I don't prefer either. I chose a title of the developing world. And my publisher, who's a lot smarter than me, rang me up and said, well, which part of this must not sound like a geography textbook is confusing you? So we came up with some better titles, and Little Bee is the one that it's called here.
Well, The Other Hand must have some specific meaning.
Sure, it refers to one particular scene in the book where someone is asked to make a very difficult moral choice that might involve sacrificing literally part of themselves.
Little Bee talks about the difference in Nigerian English and British English, and I was wondering when I saw the title change, well, the same thing applies with book titles on either side of the Atlantic. Maybe The Great Gatsby was published under another title in England.
It might well have been. I don't know, but that's how we know it now.
Why do you begin the book with the quote, "Britain is proud of its tradition of providing a safe haven for people fleeing persecution and conflict"?
That phrase is taken from an official document which is given to refugees in the United Kingdom if they seek to become British citizens. It's part of the documentation that they have to memorize if they like to become British by passing a British citizenship test. And what intrigued me about it was that in this, which I think was the fifth printing of the official document that we give refugees to memorize, there's a startling typographical error.
Fleeting instead of fleeing.
They mean fleeing. And I thought that, for me, neatly summed up, I guess, what I'm talking about in the whole book, which is that when a bureaucracy, a large bureaucracy, even though it isn't evil, comes into contact with real human souls, the real human beings suffer because the bureaucracy is not even able to care enough to, you know, to copy edit the documentation that it's giving the refugee to read.
So, did the idea for this book grow out of your work as a journalist? You were at The Guardian until fairly recently. Because it seems to me it's based on two major news stories, the perilous situation of Nigerians who live in the country's oil-producing region and how Western countries treat refugees from the third world.
Yeah, I like to try and put a human face on big news stories. But this didn't actually come out of my journalistic work at all. This came from something that happened to me quite by accident in my life. When I was in my very early 20s, I was doing summer work in the university holidays. And it turned out that I worked for 3 days in the kitchen of an immigration detention centre in the English countryside. And so I met refugees for the first time in my life. I had no idea what an asylum seeker was. I had no idea about this hidden world where people who have committed no crime at all, apart from to flee for their lives, are detained arbitrarily. And it really upset me. The conditions in the place upset me. I liked a lot of the people that I met there. And because I felt that I'd stumbled upon it and it was a story that I needed to tell, I really wanted to tell it.
I'd always thought that all citizens of Commonwealth countries are automatically allowed in Britain.
I'm afraid it doesn't work that simply. If you're a European citizen, you can very freely move across any European border. Commonwealth citizens have a set of rights, but what I'm talking about really here is people who arrive in the country perhaps without any documentation at all, which is maybe the only way that you can arrive if you come from a war zone, if you fled. I mean, I've met people who walked across Africa you know, from sub-Saharan Africa, they've made their way to Cairo, perhaps, and then maybe worked for 2 or 3 years to get the money together to pay a smuggler to bring them into southern Europe, and then had walked or hitchhiked across Europe. And this is how far these people had come. And actually, you know, a lot of them arrive without papers, and one of the first problems that arises is to work out, well, where they're from and what is the legitimacy of their claim.
And how old are they? Because here we have this young woman, she doesn't have any papers, she can't prove that she's just 14, she winds up in an adult detention center.
Yeah, and this is a huge problem, because people without documentation, you don't know whether they're a minor or whether they're an adult. And there are some heartbreaking stories about children. I mean, there are a lot of children detained in these places right now.
Why is she called Little B? Obviously, that's not her real name.
No, she has a different real name, but when she flees from the incident that happens in the book, I mean, something really awful happens to her. She has to run away, and she is very scared that people will be able to trace her, will know which village she comes from by what her name is, will know what her ethnicity and her religious affiliation are. And so she takes an assumed name. She takes on the name Little B.
Does she have any reason to believe that once she's outside of the area that she's grown up in, she still will be in danger?
She's in common with a lot of refugees who really have escaped from very traumatic situations. Well, it takes a long time for the fear to go away.
So it's PTSD. In her case, she's seen some pretty terrible things.
For sure. I mean, a lot of these people will have post-traumatic symptoms. And something that really struck me, actually, is that horror and fear are not something, when you meet these people, they're not something that they can just turn off when the cause for that horror and fear goes away. I mean, they've seen something that, you know, I hope to God I never have to see. I hope I never have to live through some of the things that they've lived through, because it changes them and it doesn't go away for a long time, which is, I guess, why they need compassion.
But instead what they get is this dehumanizing British immigration detention center. And yeah. She has to figure out ways to survive.
She has to use the same resourcefulness that it took her to escape, to survive. And I guess when I met some of these people who'd been through the detention system, I mean, this is why I liked them. I guess I wrote about them not because they're not just victims, because they are actually the most resourceful, the most resilient, the most good-humoured people I'd met, the best storytellers I'd met, you know, and as a writer, I could only admire them and just and despair at the way they are perceived as people who are parasitical almost. Because I think if you look at someone who is an asylum seeker, someone who has fled, who has managed to make it to a place of safety, well, actually, you're looking at some of the best and the most resourceful people in the world, and you're looking at people who have the most to contribute.
Her opening line in the novel is, "Most days I wish I was a British pound coin instead of an African girl."
Yeah. Well, I like this because we're often told that we live in a globalized world. And when you look at that world and you look at the word globalization, well, you think, well, yeah, it is. It's half true. You know, I half buy that. What is global, what can move freely, is money and people that money is attached to. But poor people can't cross the same national boundaries that money can cross. And I was interested in the refugee crisis as being a consequence of this partially globalized world, where we can take all of the resources out of a place, but we refuse to take the people who are left behind without the possibility of making a living because all of the natural resources are gone.
My guest is Chris Cleave, whose second novel, Little B, became a New York Times bestseller when it was released in this country last year, now available in paperback from Simon & Schuster. You recently wrote that you have called your last column for the you've written your last column for The Guardian in England. Why did you stop after 2 years and 88 columns?
Sure. Well, I was writing an entertaining column about my children, because I believe that childhood is something that's beautiful and should be celebrated. And I guess I was trying to write the antidote to the quite despairing tone in a lot of the parenting columns that I was reading. I wanted to make it fun and beautiful. And I promised myself when I started that if I ever ended up being the kind of dad who embarrassed his kids by writing about them in the paper, then I'd stop. And I guess my eldest now is 6 years old. The particular week I decided to stop was when he got a girlfriend. Mm. And their the conversations they had were so beautiful and so funny, but I felt that it was none of my business to continue reporting them, and I'd let them have their own lives.
Well, you've written in your fiction about some pretty depressing things. Your first novel, Incendiary, was about an Al-Qaeda bomb attack at a London soccer match, and it was published in Britain on the very day that the suicide bombers killed 52 people in the London transit system. That must have been quite a shock.
Yeah, it was a shock. I mean, I write about these things not because they're harrowing and not because they're depressing, but because I like people's ability to recover from them, right? So I guess everything that I'm writing about, whether it's a crisis to do with someone who's lost someone in a terrorist attack or someone who's fled from something horrific that's happened in the world, those are propulsive events that start my novels, but they're not what the novels are about. I'm actually about the redemptive process by which you take people from their nadir and watch them build themselves up again, which is what I really like about people.
Your other female narrator, Sarah O'Rourke, has also lost something when we meet her.
Yeah, well, Sarah is a character who, on the face of it, has everything.
She's the editor of a posh British women's magazine and happily married, although she's having an adulterous affair.
Mm-hmm. And she's got a terrific kid, you know, who's he's called Charlie, but he will only answer to the name of Batman in the book, modelled on one of my own kids, actually.
But we have Little B and we have Batman.
Sure. So she has, you know, she has everything that she needs. And yet, she's not happy. And in common with a lot of people who have everything that they need, there's actually more that they want. And she goes through a long process of working out, well, who she needs to be and how she needs to live.
I don't want to give away too much of the plot because... But these two people do connect.
They do.
Sarah and Little B.
Yeah, they meet. I mean, I don't mind giving away a little of the plot, if I may. They meet on a beach in Africa. The event that Little B is fleeing from is an event that Sarah is involved in. I mean, she's
deeply
implicated.
She witnesses it accidentally.
Yeah, and she gets involved. And this is the event that inextricably binds two people who in the normal course of events would probably never meet. And this is what I like doing. I like putting people together from different sides of boundaries, be they, you know, boundaries of ethnicity, of morality, of religion. And I put them together and I look at, well, okay, must they necessarily despise each other? Must they necessarily ignore each other? Or is there something that's beautiful and fundamentally good about human beings that will mean they'll help each other?
Well, Little B teaches herself British English, which she says isn't half as rich as Nigerian English, the language she grew up with. But that really does enable her to function in the world outside the detention center and connect, I imagine, to Sarah. But she's somebody who is very much older in many ways because of her experience than we would expect. Early in the book, she observes a girl with scars on her legs, and she has a theory about scars.
Yeah, well, she says that we must see all scars as an example of beauty. And her logic for that is that, you know, scars don't form on people who are dying. So whenever you see a scar, You must try not to see it as something that's ugly, because it actually means that that person has survived. And then she takes that by extension to talk about sad stories. You know, why do we tell each other sad stories? And she believes that actually a sad story is the same as a scar. It means that the storyteller is still alive. They've got through that. And one of the ways they've got through it is by sharing that story. And so she has this theory, which I really believe in as a novelist, is that we talk things through with each other in order to get better in ourselves.
Do you see yourself as a novelist first or as a journalist who started writing novels?
No, I'm a novelist. I'm a novelist who has dabbled in journalism, but I was never a good journalist. I like making things up, you know?
And obviously you like getting into women's minds because this book is narrated by two women.
Yeah, I deliberately make myself very different from myself when I write. I try to make myself very small. I try to go away so that my characters can be very big. I choose to cross these boundaries of gender or of ethnicity, and I make myself different.
The book came out a couple of years ago in England, last year in this country. Have the reactions been similar?
I guess, yeah. I've been really surprised and moved by the reaction. This is not an easy book. This is a book that I thought would be difficult and challenging for people. And I'm absolutely amazed by the way that people have taken to it and that it's snowballed and the way people are talking about it. I think it does huge credit, actually, to a reading public that a lot of people didn't believe was out there.
Well, it can be very dark, but it also can be very funny.
And,
it might have been more difficult if it weren't so funny in parts. Your previous novel, Incendiary, was turned into a film starring Michelle Williams and Ewan McGregor. Isn't Little Bee also going to be turned into a film?
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be a film, and Nicole Kidman is going to play the Sarah character. We're not sure who's going to play Little Bee yet. I think they're looking around to cast someone that hasn't been in a movie before for that.
When you say we, how much involvement will you have in the filmmaking process?
I'm not going to be very involved at all, actually. Hopefully they'll phone me when I can go and see it in a movie theater.
Were you surprised when you saw Incendiary?
I loved it, but I was more involved in that, and I've learned not to be. I mean, as a novelist, what I do is I really explore the interior of people's minds, and I try to let the reader be a co-pilot almost in this very sort of first-person, urgent account. And what I do is really given to internal states that I hope are beautiful and are sometimes funny. I don't know how to translate that to the screen. You know, smarter people do that. Grown-ups do that.
But you have figured out a way to take the major news stories of our time and somehow make them into compelling fiction. There are so many terrible things happening in the world. I'm sure you have ideas for lots of new novels.
I try to write about the happy things as well, you know. But what I am absolutely convinced about is that real life is interesting. You know, that reality bears examining, and the moral questions it throws up are entertaining and fun to talk about. So, you know, real reality rather than reality as a TV format is always where I'm going to be going.
Chris Cleeve's novel, Little Bee, is now available in paperback from Simon & Schuster Paperback. Thank you so much for being with us. I assume we'll be seeing you soon with the next book.
Thank you. Early next year, I think, with the new book. And thank you very much for having me on.